Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Overcoming Your Emotional Eating. We know that what you focus on is what you feel. It's been said time and time and time again. And this call was really about that concept. What are you focusing on and how are you feeling? And the reality is you've got to really recognize where your energy goes so that you can understand what you're focusing on and how you're feeling, because that's really what helps define our overcoming. Take a listen. And if you love what you hear, please review this podcast. We'd love to continue to bring you these episodes, and it's important for us to hear what you think. Thanks again for listening. Today's topic is so important because it can help you shape the way you view your food, your weight, your body, how you think, feel, and act. But it can also help you in general life as well. And that's what I really like to do with these calls. Some are just focused on weight, body, food, overeating, emotions, etc. And then some are crossovers. And today is definitely what I call a crossover call. You can use it as you wish in thinking about, you know, how you feel about your weight or how you feel about your body or how you feel about how you eat or what you eat. Or you could use it in the way that you think about how you feel about your job or your spouse or your children or your house. We know that what we focus on is what we feel. And I feel like it's overrated how often that's said. I can't tell you how many conferences I've been to, plenty, that have talked about this concept of focus. What we focus on is what we feel. And I know for myself that that can be true, right? I know that if I'm focusing on, oh, what's going wrong and what's terrible and what's happening and, you know, all the negative stuff, that it seems like more and more negativity piles up. I also know that if I change that and start to try to look for something good, in fact, you know, on a bad day, because we all have them, right? I'm not here preaching, telling you that I'm not human. I'm human. And I have bad moments. And I know that there's times when I'm in a moment, which can be anywhere from a minute to 10 or 20 hours. You never know, right? That I will, if I can gather my senses, I will actually look up, so to speak, and look around and try to find something that enables me to be grateful. And that's how I try to shift it in a real specific way. But because we know that what we focus on is what we feel. So if we're feeling like our body looks awful, our thighs are too big, my breasts are too small, my shoulders are too wide or too small, I'm too short, whatever that is, we know that the more you focus on that, the more you're going to feel worse and do worse and be worse. Dr. Phil McGraw, who I love, Dr. Phil, I love him. I've loved him for eons. He says, champions get what they want because they know what they want. They have a vision that keeps them motivated and efficiently on track. They see it, they feel it, and experience it in their minds and their hearts. What is success for you? You won't get there without knowing what it feels and looks like. So Dr. Phil, in essence, in that quote, is really talking about focus. You are the champions of your life. And what you focus on is truly what you will see and what you will feel. So if you're in your car and you're on this call, do not do this next exercise if you are driving. If you're not driving, everybody else, close your eyes. Look at the color, and I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to think about the color blue, the most vivid color blue that you can think of. Now, I want you to open your eyes, and I want you to look around your room, your house, wherever you are that you can see in your vicinity. You don't have to get up. But I want you to find as many things that are blue around you just by turning your head. How many things that are blue do you see? My guess is more than before. So I did that exercise with you and I just realized that there was actually a blue marker right next to me and I had a blue pen in my hand. I didn't really think about that before I did this. It's how our brain works, right? When we focus on something, we actually find it in our environment, right? So what you focus on is what becomes. And what becomes, becomes more powerful, right? That message is real. And it actually, I didn't know this, it actually comes with some serious science behind it that they're finding. It's called experience dependent neuroplasticity. Oh my God, I was so excited. So this is where you can call me like the science geek. I definitely have this real soft emotional side that I can talk to people about their emotions, but I also have this real cognitive part of my brain that when I read something like this, I get super, super excited. So experience dependent neuroplasticity. And when I first started in practice, 27 years ago, there was nothing called neuroplasticity. We thought that once the brain was damaged, once whatever had happened, that people couldn't change. The concept of neuroplasticity was introduced anywhere from 12 to 15 years ago. It took off about 10 years ago. We know now we can change the brain, which is amazing and so exciting to me. So neuroplasticity is just that, changing the brain. And changing what we focus on is called experience-dependent neuroplasticity. So this research has really caught fire, and the findings are super powerful. And the implications for all of us are absolutely profound. And the research behind this is amazing. I love it. And so what this is saying is that our brain is actually designed to be malleable and plastic and open to our influence. So just because, what I love about neuroplasticity, right, is just because you had an experience, maybe a very traumatic experience, maybe tons of trauma. You know, we used to think that trauma changed somebody's brain and that they couldn't go back, that they just have to kind of be in therapy for a really long time or maybe even forever, and they just have to deal with it. We know that's not true. We now know that we can change the brain, that if you really dive in there, and there have been times in my life where I've immersed myself for days in certain seminars that have helped me start to cross different bridges in my brain. And that's so cool to me. The brain is constantly shaping itself. And I really believe that it's trying to be the best that it can be for us. Our experiences are actually the fuel for the shaping. So everything we see, feel, experience, sense, and do is slowly but surely changing the architecture of our brains. And so if somebody goes through a really difficult time period and they really begin focusing on the negative, the reality is we know their brain starts to change in that way. And their beliefs and their constructs and their emotions and probably the brain imaging scans change. We know this. Between the walls of our skulls, there are billions of neurons. And they work together to shape us into the humans that they are. So that's really cool, right? And different neurons are responsible for different parts of our experience, whether it's eating, feeling, sleeping, sensing threat, firing up, falling in love, spelling, laughing, right? Different neurons are responsible for different things. Being human is complicated, and our brain drives it all, which is so cool to me. Brain science is awesome. I mean, it's so amazing. So every time you have an experience, the relevant neurons switch on and start firing. So if you have a great experience with somebody, well, your neurons switch on, they start firing, and you start to link that person with great times. I have friends like that, right? That I'm just like, I call them and I just start laughing because we have this neural connection that was established years ago. Conversely, I have other friends I might call and I feel comfort and love as soon as they pick the phone up. We have a different neural connection, right? And so every time you have an experience, good, bad, you are creating those relevant neurons and then you're firing those and you're switching them on and you're creating more and more. So it's important to remember this because if you have a good association or good neural connection or bad association or bad neural connection, that the truth is you build upon that. If you have a bad neural association with your body, that you're constantly looking in the mirror for what's wrong. And I have heard a lot of things that have been wrong with people's body, not that I've ever agreed, but that they were in this neural connection of, you know, picking apart what I call hypercriticism of the body. And our poor bodies, they do so much for us. And yet we pick apart how our calves look, or maybe how our thighs look, or maybe how our breasts look, or our stomach. And the truth is, our body is not just parts. Our body is a whole. And if you deliberately break it down like that, you begin to develop that bad neural association. And so then every time you look in that mirror, your brain automatically starts the bad neural connection, searching, just like you searched for the blue, searching for what's wrong. Searching for what's wrong instead of what's right. If you aren't deliberate and conscious in shaping your brain, all the people around you and all the experiences you have will just do it for you. If you are not conscious, their experiences, situations, and people, positive or negative, will leave lasting traces on your brain. So we become disempowered in that part if you're not purposeful. If you are purposeful, you can actually reshape and retrain your brain. So here's what's super cool. Okay, so they did a study with London cab drivers. Now here, listen, I didn't know this. I haven't actually even been to London. But in order to become a London taxi driver, the cabbies actually have to pass what's called the knowledge test. Okay, I had no idea. This is a test of memory, and it's one of the most difficult tests in the world to pass, to be a London taxi driver. It involves memorizing 320 basic routes, 25,000 streets within those routes, and 20,000 landmarks and places of interest. That, to me, is absolutely amazing. They have to actually sit and do all of that so that they can become a London taxi driver. I have no idea how they do that, right? So in any case, what they did takes about 4 years of committed study. And at the end of that, they can actually draw a roadmap of London. It's imprinted on their brains. They know everything. So what they did is they took these cab drivers in training, did a series of brain scans, and they conducted that on a group of drivers after their training, and it revealed that their brains had actually changed. So they did brain scans in the beginning, did their training, four-year training, and then brain scans at the end. Prior to the learning, the 4 years, the part of their brains responsible for spatial memory, which is the posterior hippocampus, I won't test you on that, it was much of the same for everyone. Fast forward to the end of training, and it was found that their posterior hippocampus was significantly larger on the brain scan. Amazing. The longer a cabbie had been, the bigger that part of their brain was. Isn't that astounding? So they changed their brain by learning all this information. So we have to switch from thinking about the bad to the good. We are trained all around us to look for the bad. In fact, as you get off this call tonight, I would encourage you to look around you to figure out who's training you to look for the bad, whether that be the news, the media, a friend, something you have already trained in your brain, a book you might be reading, a newspaper article, something that pops up on your computer or your phone, right? We have to be responsible and deliberate to switch our brain from bad to good. And it takes training. So when you have the good in your radar, what you want to start to do in order to change this, because we don't just have to be, right? We don't just have to be focused on the negative. When you find something good pop in your brain, or you specifically make the moment where you go, okay, I'm going to find something good. Maybe you find something good about your body. Maybe you find something good about how you ate that day or what you did. Maybe you find something good about somebody else even. I like to focus on the self first, because I find so often we have bad neural associations with oneself. When you find that good though, what you're going to do is let your mind settle on it for long enough that the neurons start firing in your brain. What we do so often, right? We find something good and we go, oh, whatever. Or someone gives you a compliment. And I've seen this so many times, and I've done it too, I'm sure. Someone gives you a compliment, go, yeah, whatever. Got out on sale. Yeah, whatever, da-da-da. You know, whatever that is, right? So this, in order to train your brain, what you have to do is settle on the good and hold it for at least 20 seconds. At least 20 seconds. After this time, you'll start hardwiring into your brain and firing neurons and strengthening the connections that will ultimately shape a new experience for you. So you got to hold it for 20 seconds. This is why celebrations are really important, because they last for a while and they help imprint the good back into us. They'll start to grow these great parts of your brain, which is what we want. If the positive experience isn't ready and waiting for you, do what you can to create it, right? It doesn't have to be monumental. Try thinking about a memory that was good, listening to a song that brings you back to a memory that was good, making a phone call to someone you know is going to bring you into a positive experience, organizing, playing, or doing something that you love or that makes you feel nurtured, and stay in that good feeling for at least 20 seconds. Hold it. That's why gratitude journals at the end of the night are so important, and they can actually shift people's brain, because you're holding that positive experience. What you focus on is so powerful. If you focus on the parts of your body you feel are bad, you will feel bad. If you focus on how terrible you did with your eating that day, you'll feel terrible. Remember, action or behavior follows feeling. So if we feel bad, we do bad. If we feel good, we do good. If we focus on what our body has done for us and how it works and how grateful we are for it. So for example, you know, my legs help my body move. My arms held my children when they were babies. When we think about what our body's done for us, it elicits a radically different feeling, one of gratitude and love, versus if we're picking apart how it looks or how it should look or how we want it to look. If we really focus on the good, we will in fact feel good, do good, and become good. Venus Williams, who is arguably maybe the second best player in the country behind her sister, but is amazing. I would take playing like her. Let's put it that way. She says, I don't focus on what I'm up against. I focus on my goals and I try to ignore the rest. In that statement, Venus is showing her brilliance, because she's not focusing on the bad. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so hard. I'm going to lose. They're so great, right? She's focusing on what she needs to accomplish. And in that, we could see her greatness.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.